Grizzle Pod episode 28, Scott Wills, Tom George. We are Grizzle, bringing you the best in growth, in cyclical growth, disruptive growth. We're all categories of growth, Scott, all of it.
Doing it all. What's up, everyone?
What's happening? First of all, we got to thank Y Charts for this wonderful podcast sponsor. They've been here since day one, and we keep cranking it out. So thank you, Y Charts. They got a great little contest happening right now on Twitter. You guess the chart, you get 2 months of Y Charts for free. Check it out on our socials. Check it on their socials at Y Charts on Twitter. That's what's happening. Scott, what do we have for this week? It's a good week.
Oh, man. We're calling it the boiling point, commodities and tech. So number one, we're going to take you through commodities because things are happening. Prices are moving. So we got to take you through what's going on in the gas market again. And then we have some good commentary on copper prices because, again, copper is one of the commodities we like, and we're going to explain to you why. Then we got to talk about Bitcoin. We've noticed that Bitcoin has been, you know, back in favor. Gold, not so much. How are they related? We're going to explain it to you. And then we got to talk about tech, some good performance updates. If you've listened to any of our other pods, we talk about ARK is our bellwether for what we call sci-fi growth, not just regular tech growth. And so we want to compare them versus the tech complex to see what's going on performance-wise, what that might tell us about the markets. And then lastly, we got to highlight one tech stock that's in focus for us. It's in our buy every dip portfolio. It's Adobe. Yep. So there we go.
It's been there since day one. So yeah, Scott, we got a good episode for everyone. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Scott, got actually some big news. We got to drop that, obviously.
Oh, man, cannot do it.
So if you guys had seen, if you're on our mail list, and you guys should be on our mail list, grizzle.com/subscribe is how you get on that. You get everything. But we have an exciting December ahead of us. The New York Stock Exchange welcomes GRZZ, the Grizzle
Let's
Growth
go, baby. ETF. And see this hat? Soon enough, it's going to change right into GRZZ.
Exactly. So everyone, first of all, thank you everyone for the support. It's been incredible. It's been an incredible journey, grinding out on Twitter, on social media, just tons of friends made along the way, tons of great insights, and we are so stoked. This was the plan from day one, and here we are. We're stoked for it. Stay tuned. So there's the SEC filing. You can find that on my Twitter. Get details there, but obviously up after launch we'll have much more. The best way to stay tuned on that and make sure that you're getting everything is grizzle.com/subscribe. Can't state enough how stoked we are for this and really the incredible support across the board. This is Grizzle's Lens on Growth, and we think it's the one. So I can't talk about much more from there, but go to the SEC filing. But more than that, make sure you stay tuned. We're looking at a launch at around December 13th or shortly thereafter. I think that's the timeline here. Yeah, just stay tuned.
Yeah, we're going to be trickling out all the details you'll need to make an informed decision. So just stay tuned. We're just getting started here on GRZZ.
Yep. So Scott, we got debt ceiling stuff, man. This is like, it just feels like Groundhog Day every day. You know what I mean? It's just like, come on. Yeah, of course you know
through
the
debt ceiling nightmare.
It just, you know, but the crazy thing, Scott and I were talking about it earlier, is like, you know, it's like it's the market just continues to have amnesia. Like, oh, worry. This is not going to, you know what I mean? Of course it's going to be worked out. It's America. You work these things out. You're not going to go down a drain, down the spiral, and just, you know, it's not going to go into flames. Of course it's going to be worked out. Buy the dip on these debt ceiling dramatic episodes.
This makes me love the market though, because this is why there's opportunities. People forget what happened like a year and a half ago or something. Like for me, you know, I've been in the market 15 years, but this is like the third or fourth debt ceiling debacle I've been through. And every time media is saying, "Oh, we might default. We're 4 hours from defaulting," and it never happens. Do you know why? Because politicians know that if we defaulted, and there's two types of defaults. There's technical, which means like by mistake you defaulted, you don't really run out of money, and then there's a real default. The government can't actually default because they can print money, but this is a technical default and it still would mess up our standing in the world as like the reserve currency, the reserve debt market. You think any of these politicians are going to live if they were in power when a technical default happens? So they know what the deal is.
I got to ask the obvious question. Like, what's the point of this drama, like, coming through? Just, like, get rid of this whole thing altogether? Or is it just, like, is it just there to for, you know, like, you know, for visual purpose? You know what I mean? Like, it.
You got to get in the heads of the politicians. I think it's a bit of horse trading. Never let a good crisis go to waste is how they think about it. So
right.
If they just all agree, you know, it's 5 days before, let's just all vote. Nobody gets anything special. So, like, Republicans have been fighting the Democrats, saying we're not going to approve this debt ceiling increase, hoping that the Democrats get a little desperate and give them something they want. But at the end of the day, when push comes to shove, if the Democrats don't give them anything and we're about to default, they'll come together and vote. But that's just what you're seeing now. You're seeing a lot of, well, I'm not going to do anything. We still got 10 hours and then it comes down to the wire and we're fine.
Have you heard about that minting the $1 trillion coin thing? Have you seen that around?
This guy I follow on Twitter, I won't name names, is like pumping that hard. And I haven't read through it because I don't think it's going to happen, but I don't know if you've gone down the rabbit hole on that.
Well, you know, you go through it because it's like clickbait by definition. Someone's like, hey, they're going to mint $1 trillion
coin. Just mint the coin. I see that. Hashtag mint the coin everywhere. I'm like, what is this coin? How does this work?
You know what? I may just join the movement just to join the movement, because, like, I'm not a part of any other movement. And I really, you got a
movement open right now. Might as well put it in there.
Yeah, I've got a slot open for a movement. You know, guys, stay tuned for hashtag. What do I put hashtag?
Mint
what do
the
I do?
Coin.
Mint the coin.
You know what I'll do for everyone? I'll actually read what this is all about and tell you where it's not going to succeed.
I hope they do, man. I don't know.
They got Yellen to comment on it, so it must be somewhat serious. Oh, Janet Yellen, the Treasury Secretary, commented, was like, this wouldn't be good.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay. Well, and we'll keep an eye on it, and I'll keep an extra eye on it because I've just joined the movement. Hashtag, what is it?
Mint the coin.
Buy the coin, mint the coin. I don't care. I'm making an NFT out of
it. You should just come in there hard with buy the coin, and everyone gets so mad at you. They're like, you're ruining our saying. It's losing its power.
Oh, man. Be prepared for a new midweek pod.
Mint the coin slash buy the coin slash run the coin.
Oh, man. So there's that. Now, obviously, we've got to talk about commodities. But what a stretch for commodities, Scott. Woof. And, guys, if you didn't listen to the episode, please do. Back to back, we had Cuppy. That was a phenomenal one. One of our best episodes ever. Just crushed it. That was the Cuppy episode. That was a numbered episode. It was a special interview episode. And then we talked about in more detail we talked about the whole commodity emergency in episode 27. So listen to that one if you haven't already. It's got the deets there. And we highlighted two picks because that's what we do. We're stock pickers, Scott.
Yeah, and they've been doing pretty well since that podcast. But the reason we're talking about
incredibly well.
All right, let's not sell ourselves short. Yes, incredibly well.
And that's why you should also follow us on Twitter, because in between these pods, well, obviously we're highlighting them on the pod, but we'd highlighted them earlier, in fact, from the pod as well on Twitter, and so they've done incredibly well. Yeah. That was Range Resources and ARK in Canada.
We don't keep anything ARK close to the vest. If we find something that looks interesting, we'll tweet about it or put it out publicly right when we're thinking of buying it. It's not like later on, oh, look what I did, made 1,000%. It's like, join us.
Yeah, the point. Well, that's why we're doing ETF. You'll see it real time.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
Every day.
It's all, and that's how we've run this whole thing from the beginning. We're just saying, listen, here's our ideas. We're open kimono here, and here's how we're going to run it, right? And the idea has always been that it's been about growth, whether it's structural, disruptive, or cyclical, and we're gonna run with the hot hand that we've got. And if everyone's followed how we did it with energy, I think that's classic, right? We did it literally the last 2 years. Couldn't have played it better in terms of calling. We were the only bears heading into 2020 on oil, only bears. And then we flipped, as anyone would, positive when it goes negative. But no, there is no analyst, no research firm that was both bearish at the start of 2020 and then got the bull call right at the bottom. So anyways, we have to celebrate that once in a while. And then I want to say this, Nat Gas stepping in at the right time was a nice piece as well. So Yeah, a little victory lap there.
So we have a chart for you, for anyone watching here, watching the video part of the pod. Just looks at commodities. So, Tom, maybe you want to talk people through or listening in. What's going on here?
Yeah. So this is the Bloomberg Commodity Spot Index. We're reaching all-time highs, getting through the last big commodity push through. So that's the takeaway here for everyone listening. Commodities are back. We've pushed through the last bull market top. This is the Bloomberg Commodity Spot Index. We're up roughly 30% this year, Scott, and that's outperforming the S&P. That's outperforming all global markets, really, man.
You haven't seen that that much in the last 10 years or so.
Yeah, exactly. And, obviously five alarm blazes across all of Europe with respect to gas. Obviously,
Pod 27 talked about it in detail. I'm happy I don't live in Europe right now, actually.
This is crazy. This is wild. So this is the chart we got now, and just talking about this is UK benchmark wholesale natural gas prices, pence per therm. Basically, it's gone parabolic. We're at 300 pence per therm right now. The average, if you're going to do it over the last 20 plus years, has been something like 25 pence per therm. This is not good. Yeah, Scott.
So that's a 10x increase, which is not normal at all.
10x increase in the last year. We've gotten 10x. And this is stuff to like heat you home, Scott. This is not like jokey joke.
Yeah, you can't say, no, I'm not going to buy this, right? You're shivering next to your fireplace.
And this was always the alarm blaze that everyone was talking about, the long emergency that there was a ticking time bomb in the energy industry. We understood it, and it just kind of all just came to a fore in this last month. And we're talking parabolic, and I mean parabolic, like i.e. this thing just went moonshot in 1 month. And people have a tough time understanding, well, what is an energy squeeze? Well, an energy squeeze is, very simply put, supply, because it takes a long lead time to get that going, is inelastic, i.e. you can't just be like, hey, here's some new therms on the market. It doesn't work like that. You know what I mean? You don't just call Jimmy, or in this case, Vladimir. And,
your good friend
Putin,
Vlad.
Right? Throw some more therms on the pipe, bud. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't work like that, right? And so supply is inelastic. And guess what? You need to heat your home come every year. It's the same sort of thing. So demand is inelastic. So you get this squeeze point that goes boom, parabolic.
Yeah, nobody cares about price, right? You need your gas to heat your home. At a certain point, you're going to pay whatever price it is. So that's why you see when there's a supply squeeze like this, prices just go crazy.
Yeah, and so you're like, and this is where you're getting all the politicians, and politicians have no idea how energy works. None, Scott. Like, these guys are clueless as it comes, and now you're getting them all on their soapbox saying, I'll fix this, you'll fix it. No, you cannot fix this. It should have been fixed 10 years ago. It was your wrong policies from 10 years ago that caused where we are now, and now you're getting on a soapbox, like, literally how this will be fixed in what's – literally how this will be fixed. It was incorrect policy that's led us to here, right, Scott? But the way this will be fixed is with free money. Again, this will be like, okay, well, now you'll get a heating check in the mail kind of thing, right, Scott? Like, you can't have poor people not have power and rich people still driving around in, like, you know, their alternative electric cars too, right? You know, you can't have that kind of world.
Yeah, so I guess in the here and now, they either have to, like, turn on coal machines that are sitting idle if they have any, like, power generation that runs on coal, or you just have to print more money and subsidize the energy so people can afford it. It seems like that's the two options.
That's the and coal, and just starting it, again, coal is tight too, so it's all tight. The whole
that's
commodity
true. Yeah, there's certain countries that are running low on coal. So like, if the UK even had plants they could turn on, it's not like they could get the supply quickly that they needed.
I'll pull up that chart for next time, but India is like basically like five alarm blaze for coal. Basically, they have no coal supplies. Like, so this is a big, big problem globally. We've kind of hit this crazy pinch point. What's the next chart we got, Scott?
This is great, because you translate. Remember, where does electricity come from? It comes from power generation. And what drives those power plants? Coal, natural gas, sometimes oil, but mainly coal, natural gas, and some nuclear. And so when you don't have enough gas and prices are spiking, well, electricity goes up too. So we got a chart here that looks at Europe, all the different countries, and the cost of electricity right now. And Tom has a very interesting kind of compare and contrast that he's going to give you here.
Yeah, so I covered electricity for basically my whole career at TD Asset Management. That was kind of a you know, nobody wanted to do
that's
the utility
kind of a sleepy
backroll,
right? Do you kind of have to zap yourself every once in a while to wake up?
Well, you know, it was interesting. It was super interesting because I was like, you know, they gave me like the most boring file to start with. I'm like, okay, but I was in Canada, North America, covering, you know, that whole thing. But then went to Europe, and it was actually quite interesting because, like, that's when renewables were all coming on. It was actually getting very dynamic, carbon pricing, the whole thing. So it was actually a great window, early 2000s, to see all of this come through. So I've got a really good historical context on how this all comes together. And, you know, I've seen this all play out. Really, I've just seen it play out. So you get very, very much about anti-CO2. So that means you're really subsidizing renewable energy, and then you know you have carbon as well, and then you're phasing out coal, and there's NIMBY. We talked about it before, but you know, I did a good little tweet stream on nuclear, but I'll have to do that for the next pod, Scott. Oh, yeah. But that was but basically no new nuclear is being built because NIMBY is everywhere. Like, anytime anyone talks about a nuclear renaissance, I'm like, wait a minute. Have you even surveyed five of your buddies here?
Some of these NIMBYs, you know what I mean? Are the ones calling for nuclear. And then if it actually came to, like, oh yeah, let's do that in your backyard. Oh no. I didn't really mean that.
No. Yeah, like, you know, everyone says, oh, well, you know, I'm totally okay with nuclear. But, like listen, just take a – well, the other part is, in America since the late 70s, there's been no new nuclear capacity, net new nuclear capacity. It's been at the same level.
What is that, like 30, 40 years? Why is it just going to start being built now?
40 years, no new nuclear. So this idea that you're going to get this renaissance not happening now, are we negative on nuclear uranium pricing? No, that's totally separate. That's a supply demand issue.
If you want more on that, listen to the Cuppy interview. He's the master of uranium.
Exactly. But this whole idea, we have a problem right now, which is basically we have no baseload. We have a baseload crisis, Scott, and that's not going to be solved with nuclear. That's not like that. And even if the world, like, wakes up tomorrow and, like, yes, I love it. Love it.
Mint the coin, build the nuclear.
Totally, and it's which is totally plausible. Like, we're not Grizzle's not structurally against nuclear. We're just talking about the facts, right? We're just saying the facts are NIMBY is the new reality, and it's just not going to come, right? And so you got to lean on gas and coal because those can be built really quickly and done. And gas is half the CO2 of coal. That's just the reality.
Yeah. Nobody's going back. Well, few countries are going backwards to coal. That's too, like, embarrassing to do that. So what's the best other thing? Gas.
Natural gas, right? And so this chart right here, and I'll talk through it. It's a map, and it shows electricity prices.
Color-coded map, depending on who's paying the most for electricity, basically.
Exactly. If you're listening to our pods and you're like, I wish I could see that chart, just go to YouTube and go to Grizzle.
Grizzle Media on YouTube. We have a video.
The pods there with all that. But I think we do a reasonable job talking through these.
I hope so. Let us know. Give us a review. How we're doing with that.
But make sure it's still a 5-star review. Just give us
we're totally happy. Dude, 5-star reviews. Give us 5 stars. Say, hate it. Worst podcast ever. It's all good.
but you know, like anyways, I was going to say an aside, but great like, love any comments that are on you on iTunes from the pod, because one of the first comments is like, love the content, hate the sound quality. You guys need to get better. And we did. I don't know. We're trying all this stuff. You know, we're all souped up. But coming back to this chart here, basically it's showing you electricity prices in all of Europe, mainland Europe. And there's an outlier here, Scott, and it's Poland, okay? So if you go to France, it's basically 300 euros per megawatt hour. If you go to Spain, it's 288. Italy, 307. Again, Germany, 302. And then you get to Poland. Poland is 141.
So less than half.
The price. Less than half the price. So then we need to dig in. What's different in Poland? Okay, and I'll tell you one thing. Poland, with respect to resources, is as endowed as Germany. Similar places, Scott. So Germany has coal, lignite coal, and so does Poland. So historically, coal has been a place where it has been a source of power for the electricity market in both these places. Now, Germany has taken the route of phasing out coal. There hasn't really been any new nuclear to speak of because of the NIMBY that we're talking about. And they really haven't invested enough in natural gas, right? And then,
yeah, the big in windmills, big in solar panels.
Exactly. Adding a lot of renewables to the mix. But so Poland, what's interesting here, Poland's at $141 euros per megawatt hour. And their power production, 80% of it comes from coal. Right. And so, like, it, what it shows you really here is you have a country that has not risked, they've kept baseload as a strategic reserve type thing. You know what I mean? You know, like baseload power, they've respected it to say, listen, I get it. We're not in doubt in natural gas, but we can't take off these coal plants. And when you think about it, the repercussions of countries like Germany, like, aren't fancy cars produced there, Scott? Mm-hmm. Aren't good, Scott?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't think they've quite outsourced the BMW and the Benz to Chinese manufacturing.
And the problem is they're building more electric cars than ever that need electricity, and what's spiking electricity prices. That doesn't help the affordability of electric cars versus old gas cars.
Yeah. These countries still have industrial production, and electricity prices are the key input to industrial production, along with natural gas. And we talked about that in the last pod as well. With natural gas prices spiking, you're seeing fertilizer plants just close. Like, we can't produce this.
Yeah.
And you know what, Scott? Guess when there's no fertilizer? We've been, like, basically all the food produced on Earth for the last, like, 30, 40, 50 years, it's been like we've been on steroids. We've been taking fertilizer this, fertilizer that. You know what I mean? Yeah. Don't worry. Yeah. Just fertilize it. What happens when you can't do that? So, yeah. Anyways.
You have food problems, which is the worst of the worst.
That's right. So that's how it all comes together. Important stuff. We continue. Scott, you want to tie it together with respect to LNG? Like, basically, the way we think about this is the North American natural gas market will continue to be bid, basically.
Yeah, exactly. If you have a shortage of gas, LNG is basically shipping gas around the world, and so it's very good for the LNG market. It's going to start maturing. U.S., North America has tons of gas. Europe doesn't have enough gas, so that benefits the price in North America.
Indeed.
Yeah. So why don't so we're talking about commodities, Tom. We've been doing some gas and some oil and coal and everything. Yep. But there's another commodity that we're bullish on, and that is copper.
Copper. Yeah. And so coming back to the Bloomberg index, that's all-time highs. Well, then must be a lot of things are going up. Well, let's talk about copper. And specifically, so now copper is at 425. It's just like it's 10% below its highs of this year. So that's not that much, considering Evergrande and all this stuff, worries about Chinese housing and the like. Let's take a look at what inventories are in China, Scott. This is an interesting chart. Basically, they've been dwindled to like nothing from June to end of September. This is a troubling chart. This is warehouse stock at the Shanghai Futures Exchange, copper. That's what's going down.
Wow. So not a lot of copper in storage. That may partially explain why, with all these worries about economic growth, which usually hits copper prices because, you know, things being built and people, going out and driving and everything, it increases demand for copper. So copper's been relatively strong, right, Tom, for the worries we're seeing about economic growth?
Incredibly strong. And so when we're sitting here, so again, inflation, can't talk about it enough, right? But so we're sitting here, and now let's go to the next chart, right? So we talk about this non-investment in oil and gas for the last 10 plus years, you know, all of that stuff. Well, hey, it's been happening in mining as well, and it's been real in copper. So this chart here looks at the top 10 copper mines in the world, and, you know, you don't get like lots of pole position in copper, right? You don't get like basically the top 10 mines that were that were there 10 years ago are the top 10 mines today.
Yeah, wow. That's just the way it works. Change is slow in that industry.
No, like you're not finding brand new mines, bring them on. And all of the ESG, the environmental social governance and bureaucratic, just like what do you call it? Your buffer, right? It's all just extended the time it takes for new mines to get built, et cetera, right? So it's just going to take longer and longer. This chart is fascinating. Basically, you're looking at every large global mine from Escondida, Cerro Verde, like basically across the board, Indonesia, Freeport in Indonesia, across the board, production in 2021 is lower by 10 to 25%, in some cases more.
Yeah, 30% at the largest mine in the world.
Exactly, than their production in 2011. This is a troubling chart when you think about the fact that, Scott, I'll tell you this, the world has not gone backwards in 10 years. We're not getting more efficient
with copper or using less of it, right? We have a whole electric vehicle future ahead of us, and that uses a whole ton of copper.
Exactly. And like, what's making this up? Well, I can tell you for a fact, it's not artisanal mines in Africa. Like, you know, there aren't all these like pop-up shop copper mines. Like, that doesn't happen in copper. What you're seeing here is a structural deficit. Again, a pinch point here. It's very real. And so for us, we've said, continue to state, the opportunity is in the small mid-cap miners. Who owns these mines, Scott? Big ass miners. And if this is showing me that then their production in Freeport's case is down from 10 years ago, they've got to backfill that inventory. So they got to go out there and be buying new production. And when small mid-cap miners trade at half the multiple, that you don't go and shop for brand new mines. You go and buy your peers. It's the easiest way to do it.
Yeah. So the reason we like the small guys, there's two things. If you're a big copper producer and you need more production, well, buying a smaller guy is much faster than building a mine from scratch, like years faster. Number two, with where values are for the small guys right now, you can buy that production for cheaper than it costs you to like produce more of your own production. So it's just a no-brainer. Bring copper on faster at a cheaper cost. Why would you not do that? So we see that part of the cycle coming. It hasn't happened yet. That's why we're buying the smaller, cheaper copper guys. As long as you have a good resource, the big guys will eventually want to gobble you up when copper prices are strong.
Exactly. And we've done a lot of work in this area. If you followed us through through the beginning of the year on the pod, and if you followed us in the last plus years, like we caught, again, another one of our big wins. We caught the copper inflection to perfection. And we just, we highlighted Hudbay, Sierra Metals as two small mid copper miners. We got the lists out there too. Again, we got some exciting stuff coming down the pipe because you guys know we have the best screening in the industry for growth. That's what powers us up. We screen. We're going to do, we have a Substack. It's Stock Safari. Make sure you're on Grizzle/subscribe because then you get everything.
Yeah, that's ground zero.
We are going to give away that screening weekly. Everyone's going to get it. Everyone's going to get
huge.
It.
Huge. Lots of idea generation here for you. So if you're wondering, how do I find the next Penn Gaming or something like that? Well, you tune into Stock Safari once a week. Boom.
Boom. It's coming to your inbox. And that, you know, what would the power you guys up, man? Like, you know, and then in December, you're going to have an ETF that shows basically us siphoning the best ideas. There you go. So, hey, listen, it's everything. We're giving you everything from the manufacturing from the start, which has to be screening, and right to the end, which is getting in there, looking through, making sure the quality's right. We're fine tailoring, Scott. Fine tailoring. An Armani suit. I didn't like Armani. You know, the... Who's Armani's boxy, right?
Those old school designs from the 80s. Yeah. Now, I mean, those Chinese tailors, they'll fly over to the States and suit you up good nowadays.
Oh man, yeah. The classic was the Hong Kong tailors.
That's right.
Like,
it was Hong Kong. Yeah.
Well, yeah, no, the Hong Kong tailors were the world renowned, man. They still are. Man, I feel bad. Like, the whole suit industry is dead. I don't see.
My suits are getting eaten by moths right now. I feel bad for them. I used to be all about the suits, but I haven't worn one in a while.
Yeah. So that's commodities, guys. You know, man, you guys come to us for everything.
Yeah.
We just talked cyclical growth, and now we're going to talk type of futuristic disruption, which is Bitcoin and gold.
Okay. So we have a chart here on Bitcoin, right?
Yeah. You know, I'll just, my commentary on this is very simple. Pull up the Bitcoin chart if you guys want, pull up the gold chart. And then ask yourself, what do you own as your hedge against, you know, stuff going caca, you know, store of
government's
wealth.
Government's gone crazy. Printing presses gone crazy.
Exactly. And, you know, listen to our last pod, too, when we talk about I'm going to take a snip from that pod and send it out again because I thought it was good. We just said, listen, you know, the don't get too phased on the world is a good place, man. Own growth equities, but just keep that insurance and don't think about it too much. Right, Scott? Like, you know, just don't get too focused on this. No. I see people get into Bitcoin or that world's going to end it, money printing, whatever. Who cares, man? Have fun, man. Have fun.
Yeah. That's what insurance is for. You don't need it until you need it. So just understand why you bought it and then let it do its thing. And it may be way down the road, but just like leave it alone.
Exactly, man. You know what I mean? Like, you're getting fussed about the end of the world when you could be owning barrels of stuff, man. Yeah. Barrels of stuff that people want. People want to do stuff. Have fun. That's where the world's going.
Humans like to live, and they don't want the end of the world to come, so they're going to do whatever they can to keep going.
Exactly. Who cares if it costs 3 Bitcoin to do it now? I'm still okay, man. Yeah. You want to own that company that's producing the thing you're willing to pay 3 Bitcoin for. That's the way the world works. But in that store of wealth side of it is that, you know, we think we own, so Grizzle's house view is Bitcoin. We've been bulls on Bitcoin and we are bullish on gold, but we've really tactically pushed, you know, Bitcoin. We see what's happening, right? But this chart is troubling, right? So Scott, we've had a whoopsie in the market. We've had all sorts of stuff. We've, you know, basically seen European power prices go, you know, parabolic. This should all be like, listen, I need to kind of, you know, I need to.
I'm a little nervous. That's when you'd be going to gold, right? To kind of like hedge your bets.
And through this whole thing, gold's been like flat to downish to like doing nothing. Like, you know, that meme, that do something meme where it's not doing anything. Yeah. That's what's happening. Gold's not doing anything. This is a very troubling situation for gold. What I would just say is if you are in that camp of, well, you know, head in the sand. I think you were seeing that, Scott, you know, head in the sand. You know, I just don't know what these kids are doing. You know, I just, you know, these kids are just, what, these kids, I don't know. You know, if you keep hating on the kids, man, you got a problem.
Give them a chance. Give the kids a chance. They're like, I don't know what these kids are doing, but they keep driving by in Lamborghinis and it's really loud. Then you need to be what am I missing here?
Yeah, you don't want to be that old man angry at the sky, you know.
Just fight it. Fight it. It happens to everyone, but just fight it for as long as you can.
Well, exactly. And, you know, I know a lot of people it's one of those things where just, you know, expand your horizon a bit. You don't have to leave gold completely. We're not either. We're just stating the this is something where you can just look at what performance is doing and really just take a hold. Like we're plugged in. Grizzle lives for that. I will make a comment on this though. So make sure, you know, make sure if you only have gold, make sure you got some Bitcoin, you know, whatever. At least rethink it, rewire it a little bit to be more open about it. But what I will comment on this about gold miners, if the price just stays flat like this and goes nowhere, the miners look way better than gold. Because what they can do, Scott, is they can put out a dividend.
Yeah.
That's something the gold bar can't do.
Yeah, gold bar, like, no cash flow. Miners, yes, cash flow.
Exactly. And so, you know, it's kind of an interesting point where, you know, to think about gold miners. Obviously, you know, we've had, we've had Agnico Eagle. We've done great interviews with them. In our view, they are well poised. I think we're going to get them back on. You know what? We got to talk gold.
Got to get them back. It's been a while. Things have happened in gold since we had them last on.
So we are far more bullish about gold miners than we are the metal. You know, we just think there's a lot more options there, and Agnico's an interesting play there. So that's our talk about Bitcoin, gold.
So just don't get wedded to any asset, right? If you think it's working and it's not, look a little deeper. Be like, has something changed? What's going on here? Not just it will eventually work. I'm going to sit here.
Yeah. It's especially for non cash flowing generating assets. Like the when you have a stock, it's very different, Scott. Very, very different, because the out is the fact that they're producing tons of cash flow. But when it comes to currencies and store of wealth, basically Bitcoin is a currency along with gold. They're a very different dynamic. It's supply and demand. You have to understand you have to get into the psyche of what's going on.
Yeah, exactly. All right, well, this is the Boiling Point episode. We talked about commodities. Now we got to talk about tech. But before we get into that, we got to show you a chart on why the U.S. is the premier stock market if you're investing in tech. And it will continue to be that way.
So yeah.
Tom found a doozy here for us.
Yeah, so this is from David Inglis from Bloomberg. This is fascinating, and using the Bloomberg system. But you know, fascinating looking at what he's saying here is just putting the U.S. market is bigger than the next 11 markets combined.
Wowza.
Like, that's like you know, this is just, you know, this is the chart you got to look at where you just say, America will always hold, like, you know, whenever it's anyone just saying, oh, you know, like, you know, America, capital markets, this is all. No, the U.S. is set to be a winner forever. They're at the center stage.
The U.S. is the big show.
It's the big show. And this is technology here, Scott. This is technology. We're going to talk more about tech, but this is why the big show, U.S., big ideas come to be displayed in America, and will always be that case. Be bullish, America. Stay bullish, America. That's what we are, man.
Yeah. Go watch Alexander Hamilton on Broadway and get bullish, America.
Yeah. Yeah, man. So this is the chart. You know, like, no other market has made a dent, not even a micro dent. If you're anybody, tech company, Spotify, you know what I mean? You're coming and you're listening. You're not getting it done in Oslo. No way.
No.
Right?
No.
You're like, there's no other exchange that's going to come close. And that's why, you know, focus on the U.S., focus on technology, focus on structural growth, disruptive growth, and cyclical growth. You can have it all.
You can. So, all right, we're talking about tech, and we got to show you there's certain performance indicators we look at that show us the sentiment in the tech market and what's working, what's not. And one of our favorites is to look at the ARK Innovation ETF. Because, Tom, how do you characterize what ARK owns versus, say, the QQQ, which is, you know, NASDAQ 100 versus, like, software companies?
Yeah. This is a good way. So this is year-to-date performance, and the ARK Innovation is like basically your whole sci-fi category of growth. This is like out there, kind of. A lot of these companies are just not even producing revenue today, Scott.
Yeah, they'll change the world, but not in the next 10 years.
No. So it's really, in our view, this is like, you know, and it's a good barometer for that. And it's a good barometer for risk taking. It's down nearly 10% year-to-date. And then you go to the Global X Cloud Computing ETF. That's a reasonable proxy, right? Scott, you want to talk about just how SaaS is kind of that middle road there? But you talk a bit.
Yeah,
about
so
that.
When we talk about tech, you have your big tech, the guys who have been around for 20 years, and social media companies and things like that. And then if you're looking at the upstarts in the tech world, that's software as a service. You just think of a lot of different things you used to do in the physical world, like, you know, pay your bills or just, you know, some different things that were all physical. They're all being digitized. So these are the companies popping up, help you, you know, plan your day a little better, communicate better. So they're some of the higher valued ones. And so they also are a bit spec, but they're more like you see cash flow coming in the next 5 years, which is a sweet spot for us. So that's why we like to look at, they're like the middle ground, because they are speculative growth tech, but they're closer to that realistic break-even point, or some of them are even profitable, versus ARK, which is straight up future.
Yep. And then obviously the QQQ, this is kind of like, you know, your stalwarts, the Googles, the Facebooks, these are like basically the ones that the Congress is going after, right?
Yeah. They're too strong. They're too big.
And they've had a hell of a year, irrespective of Facebook's woes most recently, which is, and we've always been much more favorable to Google and the Adobes of the world. But we like Facebook too, and, you know, we'll own all of them. And you guys are gonna get all the portfolio, the entire portfolio, all the winners.
It's being cooked up in a vat right now, and we'll let it loose. We'll give you each a sip.
Actually, well, you know, the funny thing is we've had the powered up version for nearly 2 years. So it's been exciting. We've been like, yo.
Yeah, we've been watching it closely. We've been testing. We've been tinkering.
Power up.
Yeah, figure out what it works.
So is there any
like interesting takeaways from this performance this year, I guess? It just shows how risk taking has changed in the market.
Yeah, just, you know, just really speaks to what our view is that what's happened here is that what's getting rewarded, I think, just, you know, the data says it, and I think this is going to be the new view, is that that high risk component is just going to be like, we don't know. You know what I mean? Like, we don't, the market's going to have trouble valuing it for I think for some time. It's not going to be slam dunks as it was anymore, but I will tell you this, the stuff that is, like, as Scott described, the software as a service, you've got your stalwarts there in the QQQ, the NASDAQ 100. That's like tangible growth. We've talked about it over and over and over again. And when we talk about tangible growth, we just think that this is the lens the market is on right now.
I think, Tom, if you look at the performance earlier in the year, I think it shows a symptom of the market structure right now. When you have a lot of retail investors, they're not digging as deep on the valuations. Some of them don't know how to do that, or they don't think of it as, it's not as important for them. They are looking longer term. So that is why some of these sci-fi growth companies can do really well. But professional investors, it's very risky for them to go out on a limb and say, man, 10 years from now, I think there's some revenue. They'd rather say, oh, 3 years from now, I can, you know, get in within the ballpark of where cash flow may be. I'm going to have some dividends, something like that. So when the market is mainly institutional investors, you don't get these dislocations where sci-fi growth is doing this much better than the rest of the market. But earlier in the year, you had a lot of speculation among retail investors. And so that's why ARK was doing so well. That has come off since then.
Exactly. And I think there's still so much opportunity and upside to get ahead of the mountain of money that's still sitting in non-tech and not understanding these trends.
And in bonds and other assets that are dead. And
exactly. So we're just going to see these waves that continue to flow through. And those waves are going to go less and less as much to sci-fi as it is to, like, okay, I get this business. They're disrupting like a real, like, bricks and mortar, and it's generating cash. Got it. Let's go.
Yeah.
So yeah.
This is tech in general, right? But you got to talk about our boy Adobe just to end things off.
Yeah. So just a backstory on Adobe. Grizzle has been a bull on Adobe for 3 years, since the beginning. Mm-hmm. If you go back to my tape, my first appearance on BNN Bloomberg, we talk about Adobe. And you know what
paid.
Else we talked about?
Adobe always pays.
We talked about Etsy, all these crazy stocks. We're like, whoa, this is like, you know, yeah. We were surfing out there. We were highlighting some really interesting stocks.
That was before 2020, when everyone was into Etsy.
Man, that was 2018, Scott. Wow. That was early time. Game, man. Early game. So yeah, we're always on the new, the fresh. That's what you can always rely on, Grizzle.
That keeps us young, so we're never gonna stop doing that.
Man, I don't. You know what I mean? I get up. And I just think, what's the next big fucking wave I can surf?
You're like the Laird Hamilton of stocks. You're always looking for the next big one.
Oh man, I just like what's the next big wave, and I want to catch it at a good point. I don't want to be stuck. I don't want my money to be lazy. I just want to make sure that I'm just setting up. And you know, we've got, man, dozens and dozens of these things. We talk about it all the time, Scott and I do, about like all these things we're watching. It's just like HQ is a fascinating place at Grizzle HQ. If you guys can see it, it's like, it's this big board of the future,
the idea board.
And we're going to be cooking up the best opportunities of that into the ETF. So that's how we see it. Scott, let's talk about this Adobe.
Yeah. So Adobe is one of these, you know, buy every dips for us. And there's an interesting chart I like to look at from Y charts. It's the percentage off the high. So it's great because it incorporates kind of the past of the company, and then also looks at the psychology of the market, because even the best stocks draw down at certain points. People are worried about something. They're selling because they need to raise money for something else. And so it just puts in perspective for me how scared or kind of, you know, overblown some of these stocks are. And so I'd like to be buying an Adobe when it's sold off, because I have confidence it'll come back instead of when it's at its all-time highs. So lately, worries about the debt ceiling, which we know are overblown, and interest rates started going up again, which is not good for tech valuations. Adobe sold off. And so if you look in the last 3 years, Adobe, as of, it's come back a bit the last 2 days, but it was down 16%, which is a nice dip for buying. I mean, even when COVID hit, it didn't go down more than 24%. Before that, before you had recession fears, it would go down in a period of sell-off for tech. It was down again like 20%. So 16 is getting there. So it's one of these things we thought that was an opportunity, and we like to look at charts like this just to keep an eye on when should we be adding more to the names we really like.
Yeah, and really simply put, and again, I think you can add Visa to this list as well. But again, you pull up the Visa chart, pull up the Adobe chart, go 20 years. Go 20 years because they've been around for that long. Look at those charts. Those are like, they're like Picasso's. They're like, they're literally like Mona Lisa's of stock investing, right? You literally don't do anything. You're a dummy if you do something, right? You know what I mean? Like other stuff, like, of course, like oil and stuff. You know what I mean? Like you'd be like, hey,
you're a dummy if you just sit on those.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
They will dummy
you. And that's why tech is so powerful. That's why you know, Scott and I have been at this. We've been working together for now close to 7-8 years. And, you know, we've come from a commodity background, covered tech, and it's just like, it is a no-brainer. We talk about these franchise-type things, and I'm not talking about ConocoPhillips.
No.
I'm talking about Adobe, about Visa.
Tech has changed the game. That's why disruption's here to stay, right? With tech, two guys, if they write some elegant code, they can make a billion-dollar company. Before, that used to take millions of dollars in equipment, and you had to have better equipment than someone else, and you had to move it around the country. Those days are over. Some code can get you pretty far.
Yeah, totally. And you know, it's dramatic. Asset light. I can't emphasize it enough. Asset light, and you know, you get one thing right, one product right, you can distribute it to millions and millions of people with no incremental cost.
It's such a crazy time because the moats have never been bigger. Meaning, when you know, once you become a leader in a certain area of tech, it's hard to, you know, get knocked off your perch. But barriers to entry have never been lower too. Anyone can get started in the sector. So it just seems like tech is a winner take all. So if you figure out who the winners are, they can ride for a long time and make a lot of money because tech's so profitable.
And that's why VC is just basically like, what's that money gun? You know what I mean? And like more and more, like there were some great data points on how much money they're spraying around. It's an incredible amount, but they're not doing it at, they're not doing it in lots of deals, Scott. They're hurting, right? Which is a sign that basically they're just like, oh, well, you know, I'm going to follow the leader here. I'm not going to take, you know, they're just hoping that enough money will push one player, Scott, whoever it is, you know what I mean? That they act as a herd, back one thing in that vertical, and hopefully that becomes, as you just said, you know, the winner-take-all winner. But they're not willing to bet on that guy that's undercapitalized, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah. There might end up being some overvaluation in the big guys versus there's some diamonds that aren't being overlooked in the mid-range or small because nobody's willing to go on a limb right now.
Yeah, exactly. And now coming back to Adobe, well,
what's one of the reasons we like it? This thing makes a lot of money.
What's the DNA on this? So this is OG, an energy guy who's converted to the dark side of technology on Twitter.
Ooh, it beckoned to him, and he said yes.
But this is
a great chart. It's just showing the free cash flow margin of Adobe over time. It starts in 2014, goes to today, and it's just showing how much money these guys make. So free cash flow is the money you have left over. It's really pure profit. Like you could pay that out to your investors tomorrow if you wanted. These guys, for every dollar of revenue they make, 40 cents of it is pure profit. So that's a profitable business. It's a double-edged sword because if you have amazing new things to invest in, you should never have free cash flow because free cash flow is cash flow minus you're reinvesting in the business. So Adobe right now doesn't have enough amazing ideas to throw every dollar back, but it still shows that the business they have is damn good and is throwing off a lot of money. And then now they have a bunch of cash that if a new thing comes along and they find a new growth vector, they can plow the cash in. So it's not the worst thing in the world to be making a lot of money.
Well, you know, they're very much like an Apple, right? You know what I mean? Like there is no number two, number three. Like basically they are digital creativity. That's, you go to them, you're doing vision, you're doing all of the graphics on everything.
Yeah,
graphic
design, movies, and they've gotten into new areas. And then if someone pops up who looks interesting, they buy them. So it's one of those things like you're the leader, you stay the leader.
War chest grows and you literally, you just no dilution. You've got everything. So, that's the reason why, Scott. So anyways, let's cut that graph, Scott. So that is the pod for the week. Want to thank everyone for the mad support, crazy support on social.
Yeah, we were blown away.
You know, man, so thankful for just, man, I'm so glad we left that we left our respective Wall Street, Bay Street places, because it's such corny ass shit out there, man, where you got real people out in the real world. And I think but there's like ton of obviously real people on Wall Street, Bay Street. But the problem is the construct is so phony. And we're in an era where authenticity is above all else the most important thing. The
people
that
we connect with. Valuable, right, in this day and age.
It's everything. It's the only currency you have. And I think, you know, the traditional asset managers are having a real trouble getting their message across, because they don't even know their message. Their message has been just collecting fees with substandard performance. That's been their message.
They never had to work for their money, right? And now that they have to work a little bit, they don't know what to do.
No. So, yeah, we're here to hunt
them
down.
We're out here grinding for everything, so...
Yeah, we know that the new school of asset management, there are a lot of great up and comers out there, and we're excited to be a part of that pack. This is the way it's done. It's the incremental dollar that you put, make sure you're putting it around behind good people that are explaining to you their investment thesis in detail. Make sure you understand it really well, and you're not just getting some sort of pamphlet in the flyer with some like family hugging each other.
Yeah.
That shit's done.
Yeah.
No, like get that corny stuff out of here, man. Talk to us about our investments. Don't be like, here's some biracial family.
I
want to
know about the oil market, not how to hug my grandmother.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? Just give us.
Exactly. Exactly. So,
or the little green path. They're like, follow the arrow.
Oh man. So Eddie, we gotta be so. I can't thank the community, the Grizzle family enough, Scott. It just, you're the reason why we're here. You're the reason. Yeah. We've gotten to the point of getting a getting our ideas on one product. We're so excited. And just make sure if you're not subscribed, make sure you subscribe, grizzle.com/subscribe. And if you want to see any of the charts from today, I think, I've actually, a couple of people are like, oh yeah, you know what, I listened to the pod, it's good. And if I really want to come back to it, I'll come to the video and just kind of, scroll to find the chart.
Yeah,
that's kind of an efficient way to do it. Scott, that's the pod for this week. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks for tuning in, everyone. See you next week.